Okay, call this evening's meeting of the Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Advisory Group meeting to order. Are you going to do a roll call?
Then? Yeah, I'll start the roll.
Wonderful.
Addy? Araz? Austin?
Here.
Bachner?
Here.
Baird?
Here.
Bonner?
Here.
Brandhorst?
Here.
Burkett? Creedy? DeSorbo Quinn? Duba Clancy?
Here.
Economos? Foster? Graham? Grant?
Here.
Hartshorn?
Here.
Herman? Iverson? Ken Johnson? I do not. I think as long as we can keep some social distance, we should be okay.
Okay.
Oh, Ken Johnson's here. Yep, I saw him. Kirk Johnson? Stephanie Kang, Megan Cascatello, Farzad Khalidan, Kent Kirk,
here,
Kreisman, McCauley, McAdams,
here,
Navarro,
here,
Nicholas,
here,
Norman, Oates,
here,
Pepernick, Peavy?
Here.
Ricchetti?
Here.
Riley? Rogers?
Here.
Shiner? Schumacher?
Here.
Shiner is here, just even though that's my voice for the audio. Thank you. Shay?
Here.
Simon?
Here.
Sir Zenowitz? Thought I saw Dorada. Okay. Weissenberger?
Here.
Yoon? Okay, let me just double check. 1, 2, 3. So wait, let me just count
Foster.
Again. What's that? Foster, we missed you. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I know, let's see, just give me 1 second. I know, got another person joining remotely. And I just got a text from somebody who's trying to get on.
While Lisa's doing that, I'll just start our meeting with the land acknowledgement as I plan on doing. Each time we're together. So as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on lands that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, the Menominee, the Potawatomi nations, and more. We will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people, stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather.
All right, we'll keep moving along. The next order of business is approval of the minutes of the August 2nd meeting. Are there any comments, correct? Or well, actually, can I get a motion to approve? Mm-hmm. And please help me with your name to remember.
Nancy.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Nancy Nicholas.
Nicholas, okay, thank you. I was starting to get used to everyone and then we added this. And it's not the same.
I think maybe if you have the materials, I'm happy to do it, like 10 cards for.
You know what? I have them and I took the car that was at the base of the driveway today, which did not contain the 10 cards.
Okay.
So you have them printed? I have them printed, alphabetized, and they're in my other car.
Okay, great.
So for anybody who thought I was organized, let me correct that perception for today. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. And your last name?
Simon.
Simon. Thank you, Liz. All right. Are there any corrections, questions, or comments about the meeting minutes? Yes.
I believe it was the intention to include the draft of the definitions as part of the minutes. Am I correct in that assumption?
I don't recall that.
Okay. All right. Well, then I have a correction when we get to the actual definitions. There's a substantial error typo in them.
Okay.
That was distributed.
Okay. Thank you. Hang on. Meeting. Okay. On the because we are still holding this meeting remotely because it's not practical to have everybody in the same place all at one time, and we need to offer the remote option under the emergency order, I think we'll go ahead and continue to just do everything. And I apologize, it's going to take a minute, but let's do everything as a roll call vote just to make sure that everything is in compliance with the Open Meetings Act. I'd rather exercise extra caution on this. So I will call the roll of the members who were noted as present or who have since joined the meeting. If I don't call your name, please let me know and I'll make sure to mark you as present. So I see we have a few people who joined. Okay. Austin?
Yay.
Thank you. Bachner?
Yay.
Baird?
Yay.
Bonner? Yay.
Brandhorst?
Yeah.
Creedy?
What are we voting on?
The minutes.
Yes.
Duba Clancy?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Hartshorn?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yeah.
Kirk?
Yes.
McAdams?
Yes.
Navarro?
Yes.
Nicholas?
Yes.
Oates?
Yes.
Peavy?
Yes.
Ricchetti?
Yep.
Rogers?
Yes.
Shiner? Yes. Schumacher?
Stay.
Shea?
Yes.
Simon?
Yes.
Sierzenowitz?
Yes.
Weissenberger?
Yes.
All right, motion passes. All right. Erica, do we have any? Oh, let me go to public comment. Do we have any members of the public who are participating tonight who would like to make public comment? All right, hearing none, we can move on to the next item of business, small group discussion.
So small group discussion is actually, I think, going to be tied in with DEI goals and responsibilities.
Okay.
That's okay with everyone. So we can do that after the presentation.
Okay, is everybody okay kind of moving the plan around a little bit tonight? Okay. Is there anybody, just by the way, that I did not call for the minutes who is here and I haven't noted as present? Or do we have everybody? Okay. All right. The next item is unfinished business, which is continued consideration and approval of amended definitions of diversity, equity, and inclusion. The first thing I need to do is ask that we have a motion. Before we do that, Glenn, do you want to let us know just quickly what your correction is?
Yes. Looking at the the red line version that we were providing. If you look at the proposed amended definition equity, there's a paragraph, which I guess is the second paragraph, that starts as an outcome, we achieve equity in those aspects listed in diversity, such as race, gender, and so forth. And then after the parentheses, there is a substantial omission from the original draft. The sentence doesn't make any sense the way it currently stands. What has been omitted is the term no longer determined. And then it goes on to say, in other words, disparities based on diversity are eliminated and outcomes, it picks up for all groups, are improved. So that is, I assume, a typo.
It is. Yeah. Thank you for catching that.
The
word was present, no longer present. What?
So the first thing we would need to do tonight to kick off the discussion would be to make a motion and get a second to approve amended definitions.
Hey, Lisa?
Yes?
Hi, it's Mindy Creedy. Could I make a motion that we also discuss the Pledge of Allegiance?
Well, we're not to that point on the agenda yet, Mindy.
Okay.
Lisa, this is Jessica. Since we're still doing the DEI, I wanted to motion that we just table it for now and then come back to it at our next gathering.
Okay. So I have a motion.
I'll second that. It's Tim.
And Tim Brandhorst. Okay.
Yeah, point of order. I think you need a motion to adopt this if you're going to table it.
Yeah, so let's do that. Let's first, so that we can bring it into discussion and then make a motion to table. Jessica and Tim, can I ask you to amend your motion to approve amended definitions and then we will go to table it?
Yeah, I think that sounds good.
Tim, do you concur?
Yes.
Okay. Motion to approve. Okay. Now, will you please restate your motion to table?
I motion to table the approved definitions.
Okay. Amended definitions, correct. And Tim, do you still want a second?
Yes.
Thank you. All right. I will do a roll call vote on that.
No, we have
discussion. Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Point of discussion. Thank you.
This is on the word equity. What did we do with the previous words? We're jumping diversity and everything else.
We haven't approved any of the definitions yet.
But we're already accepting motions to go directly to equity.
We're not. So the motion on the floor initially was to approve the definitions of diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Oh, really?
There's now been a second motion to table that. Any discussion on the motion to table?
Okay.
Yes, I'd like to know why we're tabling or why somebody wants to table it.
Okay. So my understanding is the working group is still considering information that was provided at the last meeting. And we as chair people are still reviewing that. And so I think it would be wise at this point to move to bring this to a close at the next meeting in September and for tonight to move on with discussion of other items.
I think that makes sense if the working group is still working on it. And that way we can have something to the whole committee that is in a more final draft for in a more final form for everyone to consider.
Robert?
Yeah, Navarro. So because we're making corrections here, they are just being made to say in the motion that we are referring back to the working committee, not tabling, right?
No, the motion is to table the conversation for tonight.
doesn't. And then so that way it gives the working, it's the same thing. It's the same outcome.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
That's all right.
Glenn.
Perhaps some people came to this meeting prepared to make suggestions, which would be considered by working group. So I think it's a bit premature to table until we exhaust that possibility if anybody wants to bring up any discussion points regarding the definitions.
Sure.
So I would suggest that we, I hate to go through all these procedures, but vote the table motion down and then have whatever discussion we're going to have on the current state of the document, the current state of the definition. If there is none, then we just table it. And of course, at the conclusion of whatever discussion we have, we table. I just think tabling is premature given the fact that some people came here with the understanding that they were going to discuss these definitions. I personally have nothing to contribute, so I don't really have a dog in this fight, but I think other people might.
Okay.
And I don't want to shut them down.
Yep, fair enough. So when we call the roll, if the motion to table fails, then that means we have to talk about it tonight.
Yeah.
And now we can table it later. I mean, you know, we can still table it.
Yeah, you can always reintroduce a motion, but
sure. I think that's fair. I do think if the working group is still working through this and wants to have a final version to the committee, it does make a little more sense to have that time to do it so that what we are talking about is the most final form of it. And I think we did suggest at the last meeting that if there are things that people would like to revise, I think we got some from some committee members
I got some today.
Yeah. That providing those in email format so that we can send those along to the working group.
Was that the only channel that was to be used to get information to the working committee?
Well, in terms of, so the question I believe that was posed at the last meeting was, if I have suggestions I want to make, how should I make them? Mm-hmm. And we said, well, you can always make them, of course, at the meeting. These are open forums. If you have any suggestions, we ask that you email them to the chairs, strictly for the purpose of avoiding inadvertent violations of the Open Meetings Act. Because if there are too many people on an email, it can create a violation of the Open Meetings Act. And so that's why we ask that the comments be sent to the chair people, and then we can distribute them without violating OMA.
Okay, we're still in discussion on the motion to table. Why don't we do this? Why don't we ask during this discussion whether somebody has some comments to be made and referred to the working subgroup? Are you following me?
I'm following you. I think though we should take action on the motion to table first.
I think this could be part of the discussion of trying to streamline things. If nobody has anything they want to say, we can just go to the motion.
I would say something.
Okay. We got one person who wants to say something. I'm not in favor of the motion to table.
Lisa, can I just chime in as the person who made the motion to table it and also as a member of the working group? I just wanted to say that I think, you know, at our last meeting, we spent all 2 hours talking about the definitions. And I think, you know, Mindy even mentioned wanting to move on to talking about the Pledge of Allegiance, and there's just other items that we can get to. And I respect anybody who came in with suggestions of things they wanted to talk about with the definitions. And I think, as you said, you know, those can be presented by email or the next meeting, but I just think tabling it is good because it allows us just to kind of like move forward and kind of like have just a little more momentum on what this group is doing instead of kind of just like remaining sort of stuck on the same thing. So I just kind of wanted to say that as an explanation of why I made the motion. Not to shut down anybody who came in with, you know, things they wanted to bring up. I want them still to be able to do that in certain ways, perhaps by email or next time.
So I'll look to my fellow chair people. What do we want to do? Do we want to take a roll call vote on the motion to table?
I think
Can I piggyback on what Jessica just said? There might be a way to send recommendations and comments to us through you, so that we can get collect everybody's opinion and then make a recommendation at the next meeting.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, I think so too.
There's a difference in how people, there's some give and take in a meeting, whereas if you send an email, there's not the give and take.
And I think we completely appreciate that. I think there was a long discussion at the last meeting. I know that not everyone can attend every meeting. We have spent two meetings now discussing this. I understand there may be some additional perspectives. We want to hear from everyone, and everyone will have an opportunity to have their perspectives heard. I think what the people who made the motion tonight are asking for is that we table this item and we will move on to the other business in the agenda. This still has to come back to the working group, or to, excuse me, to the entire advisory group for a final vote. And there still is discussion before a final vote.
May I say something? I would also add that.
Hang on 1 second.
When it was brought up two meetings ago to have a discussion group, some people stepped forward and were part of that, and other people did not. And there have been many, 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 many emails going back and forth among this group, that group. And I feel like we can't keep talking about this. We may never get to 100% of agreement, but they're working on the final stages of it. And if we keep taking every meeting to talk about this, we're never going to do anything else as a group.
I mean, it seems like we're just asking for, the working group's asking for a little more time.
Right. And they're happy to take input and happy to engage in conversation.
So I think we should go for a roll call on the table.
We're still in discussion on the motion to table. We have an agenda that states that we will have effectively a discussion on these definitions. And I know one person who has stated that he wants to make a contribution at this point. I don't think we can shut that person down through some kind of procedural mechanism. I hate to be such a proceduralist, but if we don't follow the rules, people are going to feel shut out and excluded. And I don't think that's the correct way that this group should proceed.
I don't think there's anything about the tabling of the motion that shuts. I don't think there's anything about the tabling of the motion that shuts anyone out. We're just asking, I think, Glenn, for a little bit more time so that we can provide. We're talking about a relevant set of definitions.
Would it be effective to limit the discussion? A motion to limit the discussion then?
Well, I think we've got a motion that's been seconded to table the discussion. So we should probably go through that roll call and see where we land. John?
If it's in the chair's power to just call the votes, I suggest you do that.
Yeah, why don't we go ahead? Lisa, do you want to?
I'm just going back to my Robert's Rules of Order flip chart.
I think we're set.
Yeah. Too. All right. So, John, are you asking that we call the vote or call the question?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And again, I'll go through as those I've marked as present for the meeting. If I miss you, please speak up and I will be sure to call you. Boston?
Yep.
Bachner?
Yes.
Baird?
Yes.
Bonner?
Yes.
Brandhorst?
Yes.
Creedy?
Yes.
Duba Clancy?
Yes.
Foster?
No.
Grant?
Yes.
Hartshorn?
Yes.
Ken Johnson?
Yes.
Kent Kirk?
Yes.
McAdams?
Yes.
Navarro?
Yes.
Thanks. Nicholas?
Yes.
Oates?
Yes.
Peavy?
Yes.
Ricchetti?
Yes.
Rogers?
Yes.
Shiner? Yes. Schumacher?
Yes.
Shea?
Yes.
Simon?
Yes.
Scherzinovitz? Scherzinovitz? Sorry, Dorada. Dorada, can you hear us? All right, we'll move on. Weissenberger?
No.
Is there anyone whose name I did not call?
Yoon.
Yoon, thank you. Thank you. And you vote?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, motion passes. This item is tabled to the next regular meeting. Okay, thank you. Let's move on and let me get back to my agenda for tonight a second. All right, the next item on the agenda is consideration of request to begin meetings with the Pledge of Allegiance. Can I get a motion and a second to consider this item?
I'd like to first that.
Okay, well there, thank you, Mindy. I'll put you down as second. We have a motion in the room already. Thank you. All right, thank you. So motion and a second. Mindy, if you don't mind, can you explain to us the basis of your request?
Well, I think the binding factor of diversity, equity, inclusion is that we all love America. And so I think the best way to represent that is to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Okay. Any other discussion? Yes.
Question, what do other committees, village committees do when they open their meetings?
Sure, I staff Zoning Board, Plan Commission, Economic Development, Village Board of Trustees, Development Review Board. I previously staffed Historic Preservation. My firsthand knowledge of it is that they do not say the Pledge of Allegiance at the start of the meeting. I have not been to every board and commission meeting as of late, but I am not aware of that being on the agenda. We can certainly check and do a little bit of research if we need to, but as I sit here today, I don't think they do. The majority of our bodies do it.
Call for the question. There's no interest
in going into. All right. Start a different place in the agenda.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
So I know like village board says the Pledge of Allegiance, but I know that's
yes.
By ordinance, right?
Off the top of my head, I don't know if it's by ordinance. I certainly know it's by practice.
Yeah. It's by ordinance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
Ordinance requirement for that.
Yeah.
So I guess, it's been kind of the discussion, I'm a little hesitant to vote in favor of something like this or like forcing people to take action, especially in a committee where, DEI, right? So I don't really feel comfortable telling other people what they have to do if it's not required by law for them to do it. So I guess, to the extent it's not required by law, my question, I don't know if it makes sense for us to do that.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Lisa,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Don't we have to have a flag in the room to actually do that?
Yeah, also, we would.
You would have to have a flag there to
pledge
to? I mean, do we even have that?
No, we don't. I mean, I could get it if the motion passes, but we don't. So we do have a member of the group here who has called the question, so I'd like to go ahead and call and take the vote now.
Could I make a comment?
Well, if we've had somebody call the question, I think we need to move on to the vote.
No, that's
can't have another discussion.
I'm sorry. Okay, fine. Glenn, go ahead. Go ahead with your comment.
This is Kent Kirk. We are starting the meeting with a salute to the Indigenous people, and we didn't have a vote on that. I think it's very respectful, and the last line of it is with liberty and justice for all, and I think that's what our committee is all about. So I would strongly support the motion to start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Okay.
I do, with the land acknowledgement, it is me saying it. So it's not, we're not asking everybody to say it.
And people don't, people don't need to say it if they don't feel comfortable, but you're doing it without talking to the rest of the committee. And I certainly think that it's reasonable to consider this motion, and I would strongly support it.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Was there someone else in the room who wanted to say anything?
I'm going to just put myself out there. It's okay if everybody wants to say it. I will not say the Pledge of Allegiance. I'm in a place right now where the fact that it was written to honor the 400th year of Columbus's arrival bothers me. And the fact that the words "under God" were added in the 1950s. And there are people with real power in this country using their God and religion to oppress and harm women and children in this country. So I will not say the Pledge of Allegiance, but I just gonna put that there.
Sure, thank you for your comments. Are there any other comments on this before we call the vote?
I would love to add a comment. This is Roshni Ricchetti. I would like to support the commenter just now. Speaking as someone who has not recited the Pledge of Allegiance since I was in the sixth grade, that 1950s addendum of "under God" was added during the McCarthy era to distinguish us from the heathen Soviets. That is the history of the current Pledge of Allegiance. And I don't think that anyone, I would imagine that our dedication to our country and to our democracy and to the political process is demonstrated by all of us being present here today. And I don't think that some sort of like nationalistic gesture, empty gesture like this is really necessary to demonstrate our patriotism.
Would anyone else like to make a comment? Yep, go ahead, Jessica.
I want to make a comment. I would just say I want to piggyback off of what Roshni said in terms of it being like an empty gesture. I think all of us are here demonstrating our patriotism by being involved in civic issues that we care about in a town that we really care about. And I think whoever was the first person to comment who's in person, that other committees don't do it either. So why would we do it? Yeah, that's my only comment.
Okay, thank you, Jessica. Any other comments
on it?
Mindy, and then Chuck, and then we'll go through. Okay,
well,
go ahead.
Chuck, I mean, I don't want to dominate. Go ahead.
All right, so Chuck.
I just think that basically what we're trying to do here is get to the lowest common denominator. And anybody can object to anything. And this is, it is a sign of patriotism, and those that don't want to do it, fine. I just think that if people want to, it should be honored.
Okay. Sunhi?
Just to share, yeah. I think this is Sunhi, and well, as an immigrant, well, I didn't grow up, and I was not exposed to Pledge of Allegiance. You know, so people like me, somebody who just immigrated or, and I've been here for 15 years, but I never really, as an adult, I never got a chance to memorize it and expose them to, you know, school settings or in a setting that it can naturally come out from your mouth. So if that is something that I can bring up the perspective of, recently immigrant or people who was not familiar with this setting, I mean, obviously I cannot, you know, to participate in this, but I think that is just the one side of, you know, why I wouldn't do it.
Thank you, I appreciate your comment. Yes.
I also just want to underscore the fact that I can say the Pledge of Allegiance anytime I want to. Or leave the house, you know, at any point I can pledge allegiance to the flag. But I don't know what brings me. Oh, I'm just saying I can say the Pledge of Allegiance at any point. I'm just wondering what it brings if I say it in this room with other people, right? Versus, you know, and I think it's weird to say, well, you can just not say it. The flip side is I can say it anywhere else, and why would I want to put people in a position of having to sit there and decide whether or not to say it with me, you know, when that doesn't, that has no bearing on whether or not I pledge allegiance to the flag. So I just want to make sure we understand that this saying, not saying it, doesn't keep those of us who would say it from being able to say it. We can say it, you know, 20 or many hours of the day that we're not in this room. And I just want to make sure we're mindful of those and the position we're putting people in to either say, either you're with us or you're not. I don't know if that's the environment we want to create in this group.
Any other questions before we call the vote? Robert?
Yeah, I want to make a comment.
Hang on, Mandy, I'll get to you next. Robert, go ahead.
Thank you.
The reason for my going ahead to call the question was that, as somebody said, this is only one symbol that we use to declare our desire to work together under a very foundational statement of what in all ancient times used to be called on faith and commitment. That's all we're saying, I hope, with the Pledge of Allegiance. I am an American by choice. When I made that choice, I ceased to say the Pledge of Allegiance for the Mexican flag. It was an exchange. But I entered this reality with the understanding that we live in a world that is changing, and that sometimes people use these symbols as ways to oppress others and get rid of others who don't seem to be falling in line. I am here supporting the Pledge of Allegiance, not only because it's a symbol. I wish and I want to work so that it's effective in everything that we do. And the words, including the word God, which we don't define, it could be the God of the Masons, it could be the God of the Christians, it could be the God of the Muslims. It could be other gods. We never said which God. The word God is generic. Shouldn't affect anything that we do or say. But we need to pledge ourselves to work to make these words that we say effective and conducive to peace and tranquility, not to use them as hammers to beat people over the head with them. That's the commitment that I think we need to make.
Okay.
If we choose this strongly to say those words.
All right, thank you, Robert. Mindy?
So I'm totally aligned with the last speaker. I think this would align us with a value that we're all trying to work for. I don't think we're trying to separate the country with our DEI work. I think we're trying to unite people. People come together. God doesn't mean a Christian or a Muslim or any other faith. It means just a higher power. And if I really have to listen to the land treaty thing every meeting, then I want to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
All right. If there's no other comments, why don't we go ahead and call the vote?
You know what? This is Cindy Shea. I don't know if you could see. I had my hand.
Oh, I apologize, Cindy. Thank you.
So the first thing I want to say is, I think this discussion is so important because this is exactly what our committee is all about. And if you look at our proposed definitions, you know, we say that diversity involves bringing different ideas, perspectives, lived experience, and worldviews to the table. And I think that's exactly what this discussion is doing. So I think that's great. And along those lines, I think to get back to kind of what Kent, I think it's Kent, again, I don't know the names for sure, had said earlier on, is that I think we should consider not saying anything so that as we start our discussions, nobody's bringing any bad feelings to the table because of something we're forcing, whether it's the land I don't know, is it the land? I apologize, I don't know what you're calling it, but the land thing or the Pledge of Allegiance, that we start the meetings without anything. So yeah, that everyone doesn't get like keyed up about something we're saying at the beginning of the meeting.
Yeah, I mean, I see them as different items. So I know a couple of people have brought up the land acknowledgement tonight. The land acknowledgement really is making sure that we focus on those narratives that have been stifled because of what we've done as a country, making sure that we understand that the land was and is still inhabited by people who didn't want the land to be taken, right? So especially in this setting, I think those ideas make a lot of sense. And it is a way to help us refocus. Again, it is not something that everyone is saying in the group. It's one of the chairs that's saying it. And so yeah, so those are my comments. And I think we might be ready to. So we have a few other comments.
Can I make one? Well,
hang on 1 second. We've got a couple hands up in the room. If you want to speak, let me just recognize who on the call would like to talk next. I think Roshni, you have your hand up. Is there anybody else? I'm gonna get to the people in the room and then I'll get to the people on the call. Is that okay?
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. So Sharon?
Yeah, I was just wondering about the land acknowledgement statement. I was under the impression that was a requirement that at all meetings of the village.
When we first started our first meeting, I explained how and why a land acknowledgement, especially in a setting like a diversity, equity, and inclusion group, is an important part. It's not required. I asked the group if it would be okay to do that.
Okay.
And it is an acknowledgement of what we're, you know, what we're doing and the space that we're holding in that moment, right? And that there are other narratives.
So there's another hand over here and then I'll get to you, Roshni, next. Is there anyone else? Yeah, go ahead.
I understand the land acknowledgement statement and I do think it's important, but I think there are people in this group who also think that the Pledge of Allegiance is important for different reasons. And
louder, please.
I'm sorry, I'm in the back of the room. So, but I am not, I guess I would say I agree with Cindy that saying the land acknowledgement is going to cause other people to want to say the Pledge of Allegiance. And I'm not sure, and I feel like that's putting us in a us versus them situation. And I am not in favor of that. I think we're talking about how we make everything in River Forest more inclusive. And by putting us in an us versus them situation, it's going to be too much. I would agree with Cindy that maybe we don't say either statement.
Roshni?
So first of all, I'd like to speak to the comment that God is an inclusive and vague term. As a secular humanist who can also be considered an atheist, I do not believe in a higher power. The US Constitution, under the auspices of which we are operating, I would hope, does not mention God ever, not even once. It does, however, reference freedom of religion, which without reference to God, I would imagine means freedom from religion, which is really the only objective way to conduct it. I think that it is fundamentally non-inclusive, frankly, of people like me. Furthermore, the land acknowledgement statement, I hope that we can agree that the land acknowledgement statement is not a political view one way or another, though there can be those who choose to politicize it. It's an acknowledgement of history. Perhaps my understanding of the history is mistaken, but I don't think that there is any argument that the lands that we are currently occupying were at one point the homeland of another peoples. And so that's a historical statement. For me personally, being in a room where the pledge is forced to be announced is introducing magic into the equation. That's not history, that's magic. We have a 250-year-old constitution that does not require mention of God, and yet we need to talk about a 70-year-old pledge of allegiance that, you know, somehow brings us together. It just makes absolutely no logical sense to me.
Okay. One final comment, and then why don't we go ahead and bring this to a close? Go ahead.
I think an important difference, though, between the pledge of allegiance is that I don't think anyone's asking me to recite a land acknowledgement, whereas with this, someone would be asking me to recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I wonder then if the solution would be, you know, one of the co-chair wishes to recite the Pledge of Allegiance after the land acknowledgement. I would imagine that would, you know, put those two on equal footing, but I think it's a little bit dangerous, maybe. That's a too strong of a word to say, don't say the land acknowledgement if you can't say the Pledge of Allegiance, because
so just as thank you very much for that final comment. Well, hang on a second. Let me say something.
Yes, ma'am.
So for those of you who are participating remotely and we have a large room, everyone is trying to social distance. And so we have a microphone at the front of the room. If you are unable to hear all of the speakers, we do have the closed caption feature turned on if you're able to use it. We're picking up the comments, I think, pretty accurately with that feature. And so I would encourage you to use that. And I'm monitoring it to make sure that it is picking it up. So if I ask you to speak up, it means that the closed caption feature is not picking up your comments. All right. Is there anybody we have not already heard from?
No, but I want to respond.
Mindy, I think in order to move this along, please, Mindy, let me finish my statement. Yes, if you have anything new to add, we're happy to hear it.
Yeah, I will.
Okay.
I don't think that any land that the Chinese, the Indians, any race has ever acquired isn't land management. They've all taken over lands. That's what they did like 1400 years ago. And if we want to bring this whole group together, we have to find one thing that we all agree on. And if it's not the flag, I'm fine with that. But we got to find one thing that we all want to aspire to agree on. And you know, I don't know if it's your God or your what, your country, blah, 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 but everybody has taken land from everybody. And so to make it that this is the only country that ever did it, that's bull. That's bull.
Okay, thank you. All right. I don't see any other hands up. I see one final hand up, Richard.
We've discussed this over 25 minutes, I think, and got no closer. I think the one thing that is obvious is that this Pledge of Allegiance is not uniting this group. It may be important to a number of people here, but it's certainly not important to me, and I really against it for all the reasons that have been stated against it. I just wanted to say that. I also think that maybe next week I'll bring in a motion to recite the Ten Commandments every time we have a meeting. A lot of people think that's religious. I think it's good sense, but I have no religion. I can't even call myself an atheist. But I can tell you this, I am not bowing to a flag. I serve this country. And if you want to call that patriotic, that's fine. But the flag is not something that unites me with anybody. I think that what we're trying to do things for the human race, all humans, whether they're American or not. And I think the Pledge of Allegiance is silly.
Okay, I'm going to take the vote. Faulkner? No. Baird?
No.
Bonner? David? I'll come back to David. Brandhorst?
No.
Creedy? Mindy?
Are we voting to say it or no?
The motion is to begin with the pledge. Do you want to vote in favor or against the motion?
Yes.
You're voting in favor. Thank you. Renee Duplaclancy?
No.
Economos?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
Grant?
No.
Hartshorn?
No.
Johnson? Ken?
No.
Thank you. Kirk?
Yes.
McAdams?
No.
Navarro?
Yes.
Nicholas?
Yes.
Oates?
No.
Peavy?
No.
Ricchetti?
No.
Rogers?
No.
Shiner? No. Schumacher?
No.
Shea?
No.
Simon?
No.
Dorada?
No.
Weisenberger?
No.
Yoon?
No.
Let me come back to Bonner.
All right, what were we voting on it? Let's stop by the bathroom.
Whether or not to start the meetings with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Oh, can I just vote present?
Yes. Thank you. 1, 2, 3. Okay, the motion does not pass. Thank you for your discussion. All right, the next item on the agenda is presentation and overview of the Village of River Forest. One of the things I think that Erica had mentioned at the start of this process is that we were going to spend a fair amount of time working on education and trying to understand our community a little bit better. So one of the things I wanted to do was just kick us off with a presentation regarding the village, just kind of a high level overview before we start getting deep into the weeds on anything. So give me a minute just to pull up my screen and I will share it in just a moment. The rest of you. So let me screen share first. Watch as I startled all of you with my lack of technological skills. So bear with me. All right. There we go. First step's a good one. All right, here we go. Can everybody see the screen okay? I know we've got a couple. Let me do this a little bit so it makes it easier. Hang on. All right, is that okay for everybody? Can you see okay? All right. For those of you who are on the call, if you can't see anything or hear anything, please let me know. And just so you know too, I will send a copy of this presentation out to the group afterwards, but just bear with me. And for those of you who are on the phone, for those of you in the room, I try not to read PowerPoint presentations to people because that's horrible. At the same time, we have people on the phone who may not have the same ability to see the presentation. So please forgive me if I do a little bit more reading tonight than I would typically do. As you know, we're trying to accommodate a variety of audiences tonight.
That's good.
No, it's
just a nine. All right. So the Village of River Forest, if you don't already know, was founded in 1880. Our population as of the 2020 census, the data was released today, is 11. I know Erica's so excited because Erica was instrumental in working on the census, and our response rate was fantastic. That's incredibly important. Our percentage of population went up just under 5%. I think it was like 4.8 or somewhere around there, right? We were previously 11.1 and change. It's so important because at a state level, it had, and a federal level, it has everything to do with representation. At a local level, we care about it, number one, because we want to know what our community consists of. And number two, from a Selfridge Village trying to fund operations perspective, it directly relates to the amount of revenue that we receive on a per capita basis. So with that, we get more revenue to be able to provide services to the residents. So that's good news. The community covers 2.48 square miles. Those boundaries have been largely unchanged. The last map that I looked at today was from 1937. So it's the same boundaries for probably 100 years or so. As I talk about demographic information in the community, I want to make one distinguishing point. So the population number that we have today is from the decennial census. As we talk about the demographic information, though, that comes from something called the American Community Survey. So if you filled out the census form in the past and you recall filling out the long form that had all kinds of information about your income and race and housing situation, no one gets that long form anymore during the decennial census. Instead, the Census Bureau has engaged in this American Community Survey, where they are basically taking statistical samples, or they're statistically representative samples of the population, and drawing estimates based on that information. So when I present the demographic information, it is not the definitive April 1st, 2020 line in the sand. It's really kind of this rolling data pool that continues to be updated on a periodic basis. All right, so I apologize if this is a little tough to see up here. Let me tweak one thing a second. Come on. Here we go. All right, that helps a little. So the median age in River Forest is 41.7 years old. A little over 50% of our population is between the ages of 18 and 64. A little over 25% of the population is between the ages of 5 and 17. A little under 6% is under the age of 5, and almost 17% is age 65 and older. In terms of race, according to the American Community Survey, 82% of the population is white, 5.7% is Hispanic or Latino, 2.9% are two or more races. The survey says that there were zero Native and Pacific Islander. Again, that's their estimate. You may know your neighbors and know that's not true. So that's why I caveat all of this information with saying it's estimates based on the Census Bureau. There's 3.9% of River Forest residents who are Asian, no American Indian or Alaskan Natives, and 6.2% are Black or African-American. In River Forest, 88.8% of all housing units are owner-occupied, and the median value of those units is $596,900. They estimate that we have 3,971 households and a little more than 2.5 people per household. I'd like to meet half person. I know. Insert good census joke there. All right. Language other than English spoken in the home, 13.5% of households in River Forest have a language other than English spoken. I don't have the breakdown at this point of what those languages are, but I think that would probably be something that is of interest. I know it's of interest to me as I factor in how we communicate with our residents. And so that's a piece of information I think I'm going to try to drill into a little bit as we move along in this process. According to the Census Bureau, River Forest residents spend on average 33.1 minutes traveling to work. If, as far as education is concerned, just over 99% of all of our residents are high school graduates or higher. 80% have a bachelor's degree or higher. 4.8% of our population under age 65 has a disability, and 2.1% of people in our community under age 65 do not have health insurance. The median household income in River Forest is $129,928. The per capita income is $83,466, and the number of people in poverty is 3.6% of our population. So I'm going to switch gears here a little bit. And at any time, if you have a question, just stop me. If you're on the phone, you may have to shout out because I'm not monitoring hands up anymore. But I'm going to switch gears here and talk a little bit about government structure. So in the state of Illinois, we have about 9,000, just under 9,000 units of local government. And if that seems staggering, it's because it is. That is according to the Civic Federation. And as you may know, we are first organized by state. Within the state, the next basic subgroup is county. The next basic subgroup is township. And then in that is municipality. Municipalities can span more than one township, and they can span more than one county, which makes it fascinating at times. The community where I worked previously had 60% of its population in DuPage County, 40% in Cook. So we had two separate court systems, two townships, two fire districts, four school districts. It can get a little hairy. And one of the challenges that it can lead to is if you don't have that one place where everybody goes to hang out over the weekend or socialize, or you don't have those strong community centers, people can start to identify themselves as something other than the resident of that community. So you get community identity issues here and there, but not always, but sometimes. But it makes it very confusing. Who am I in? What assessor do I call, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one of the fun ways we organize things here or disorganize things here in Illinois. In River Forest, you are in River Forest Township and Cook County. Also within River Forest, there are several taxing districts that serve you. So the school districts, the village, obviously, the community college, county, the Forest Preserve District, River Forest Township, River Forest Park District, River Forest Library, the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago, and then other, such as Mosquito Abatement District. That's a fun one to know. And if you don't know which taxing bodies you pay every year through your property taxes, make sure you look at your tax bill. It lists everything out. The other thing I would say to do, if you don't have your tax bill, or if you're a newer resident to the community, you can go to our website and under, and I can send this out to everybody if you're interested, but if you go to vrf.us/taxes, there is a portion under the property tax section where you can click a button and enter your address, and it'll bring all of that information up for you. And then you can also snoop around and see what your neighbors are doing. So it is important to note that all of these different taxing bodies have their own autonomous elected bodies. They're basically different companies. So the same way ComEd and NICOR are two different companies, the village and the park district are two different companies. We all serve the same constituents. We're all here to serve the community. We have our own taxing authority. We have our own boards. We have our own staffs. So in government, there's a little fun fact. Do you know what the difference is between a city and a village? So cities, they're all municipalities, right? Cities, it really has to do with how your elected officials are elected. Cities have mayors and alderpersons. Villages have village presidents and trustees. Alder people are elected by geographic region or ward. Trustees are elected at large. So in River Forest, when you go to vote, you vote across the community to select your trustees and your village president and clerk. If you're in Elmhurst, where I live, I only get to vote for my ward alderperson, village president, and a couple other positions, or mayor, excuse me. Mayor and village president can be used interchangeably. Oftentimes you'll hear people refer to them the same. A lot of times you'll hear village presidents say, just call me mayor. Because when you go and talk to people about village president, it can be a little confusing, but as soon as you say the word mayor, everybody knows what you mean. In local government, one very important distinction with regard to the authority that we have is something that came up in the Constitution, and that's whether you're a home rule or a non-home rule community.
When you say Constitution, you mean the Illinois,
Illinois Constitution. Thank you. So since, was I think 1970, we've been divided into two buckets. If you're a home rule community, it means your population is over 25,000, or you have gone to referendum and decided to be a home rule community. If you're a non-home rule community, your population is below 25,000, or you're a home rule community who has voluntarily given up your home rule power. If you're a community that was 25 and drops below 25, so we may see some of this after the census, you have to go to referendum to decide whether or not you want to remain a home rule community. This is a big deal for municipalities because whether you're home rule or non-home rule has a direct impact on what powers you derive from the state of Illinois. As a non-home rule community, which is what River Forest is, we are limited in our ability to raise revenue. And some people see that as a really good thing. Some people see that as a really challenging thing. And it is challenging. It's not necessarily a reason to become home rule, right? Those are very controversial issues. But as we look to balance the budget every year, there are just things that we cannot do, revenues we can't raise, taxes we cannot impose by virtue of the fact that we are a non-home rule community. And of the taxes that we do collect, there can even be restrictions on how those are used. So I did a little map here, stood in my, this is my Nerdlington example, right? Like government nerds love this stuff. So as a government nerd, I decided to go ahead one day and create a map of home rule versus non-home rule, just because I think it's kind of interesting to look in the region and see what you're dealing with. So the communities in blue are home rule. The communities in red are non-home rule. Thank you. So for those of you who are on the phone who can't see it, I completely nailed that. At any rate.
But that means that, like, we sometimes hear in Oak Park that there's a referendum for a new tax or something like that, and you just don't have that.
No, you can't do that in River Forest. And so one of the things, yeah, that's a very good point. I often will field calls from people that say, you know, I'd like to do X, Y, and Z. Why can't the village do that for me? They do it in Oak Park. And the very short answer sometimes is, we don't have the legal authority to do that. So there are certain like rental programs or rental registration and inspection programs. We're limited in our ability to do that because we just don't have the legal authority. So every time the board or the staff looks into what we can and can't do, we will turn to our attorney and say, hey, as a non-home rule community, it might be on the fence whether or not we can do that. Can we get an opinion? And it's really important that we do that analysis up front. So we're constantly looking at things through the lens of what we can do as a non-home rule town.
So you want more authority?
I'm not asking for more authority. I'm simply presenting information. All right. In River Forest, as I mentioned, you have a village board of trustees. You have a 7-member elected body elected at large, one village president, 6 trustees, 1 village clerk. They all serve 4-year terms and they're staggered so that you don't have turnover at the same time every 4 years. There are communities that have turnover. I know my girlfriend worked in Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina, in that area. And she worked in a community where all elected officials turned over every single year. So her job was very difficult. We in River Forest have elections every 4 years for those positions, but they come up every 2 years, right? Because we have staggered terms. Department heads, advisory board and committee, and commission members, just like you, were all appointed by the village president with the advice and consent of the village board of trustees. So here's our organizational chart. Whoops. At the top of it, you, the residents of River Forest, have the authority to elect your officials. the Village Board of Trustees and the Village President. We also have the Village Clerk. The Village Attorneys are appointments of the Village President with the advice and consent of the Board of Trustees. And again, those departments. The Village Administrator is the head of the organization. And then we have the Departments of Administration and Finance, Fire, Police, Public Works, and Development Services.
And as a reminder, you are a interim.
Yeah, so, right. So my title prior to, so here's the way it works. So I have been the Assistant Village Administrator since September 2013. My previous boss, Eric Palm, left to become a village manager in another community. That left his position open. So by ordinance, which we'll talk what those are in a minute, I move up and act as the interim village administrator until that permanent replacement is appointed by the village president and board of trustees. So your village board and your village president are your executive and legislative branches on a very local level. The Village Board of Trustees is your legislative body, has the ability to pass ordinances, proclamations, resolutions, and to give policy direction that's carried out by the village administrator and the staff. Ordinances are essentially permanent regulations, in as much as until the board undoes what they did, they're permanent regulations. But if it's a local piece of legislation that's not required by state law, what the board does, it can undo. Resolutions enact temporary provisions or grant special permissions or privileges, and they also express positions and opinions of the Village Board of Trustees. Proclamations are the floral delivery guy of the municipal world, their celebrations, their recognitions of different things. The Village Board also gives policy direction. The Open Meetings Act applies to all legislative actions that the Village Board of Trustees takes, meaning anything they do has to be posted on an agenda. That agenda has to be posted at least 48 hours before the meeting, just like we do. So the Village Board cannot take action without taking action in public. They can go into closed session to discuss certain things, right? Setting of price for a village-owned property for sale, negotiating collective bargaining agreements, right? You don't necessarily want to give your negotiating strategies away in public, to discuss confidential matters within the organization related to employees. And so they can go into closed session, but they can't take action in closed session. They have to come out of closed session and then take action. And so that is all under the Open Meetings Act. If you ever want to see what the Village Board does, go to our website, vrf.us. Every board agenda and packet is posted. Board meeting minutes are posted. We audio record every meeting. Since we've been on Zoom, I think we've been video recording them as well. You can tune into those board meetings live. They are all available on YouTube, or you can Zoom in and check them out.
And if you sign up for our mailing list,
yep,
you can get those meetings and minutes sent to you.
Yeah, we send out the meeting agendas prior to, we don't send out the minutes, but we do send out the agendas prior to the meeting.
Oh, you don't send out the packets.
Well, the meeting, the minutes for the previous meeting are in the agenda or the packet for the current.
Yeah, so the, right, exactly.
I'd like to request that we send these presentations out beforehand, please.
Sure. We talked about that a little bit. My general feeling on PowerPoint presentations is when you pass them out ahead of time, people kind of tune out, which I know people do anyway. So thank you for being a good audience. But I'm happy to share this afterwards and post it as part of the meeting packet and on the website so that it's available to the public.
No, I request with the Open Meetings Act that we share all these presentations beforehand. It should be in the meeting packet.
Well, it doesn't, under the Open Meetings Act, it actually doesn't have to because you're not taking any action on it. And just candidly, I didn't finish the presentation until noon today. So thanks for hanging in there with me. The Village Code memorializes the ordinances and the local regulations that are passed by the Village Board. The Village Code is all available on our website, vrf.us. And if we have time, I want to monitor the time a little bit. I'll fly around the website for just a second if anybody's interested and show you where you can find these things. So I just want to spend a minute talking about how the code is organized and what each section contains. So the first section is the administrative section. It outlines the duties and powers of elected officials in appointed positions, including staff. The next section is boards and commissions, and I'll break those down a little bit further in just a moment. And that section of the code outlines the duties, powers, et cetera, for advisory bodies. The business regulations, this is not an all-encompassing definition. I'm just trying to hit the high points for you. That includes licensing and permit regulations for local businesses. It grants the village certain inspection authority. It's not unlimited, but it does grant us some inspection authority. It establishes hours of operation and other provisions impacting business operations. The building regulations section includes all of the applicable building codes. So any building that's built in River Forest has to comply with building codes. Those are established at a national level. We adopt them and apply them at a local level. And they include everything from how structures are put together to how electrical wires are supposed to be run to how plumbing is supposed to go in your house. And it also includes property maintenance standards. No one likes permits. I completely understand it. It feels very bureaucratic and very regulatory. Here's my plug though, for you as consumers. We are an ombudsman, essentially. We are a neutral third party who go in, take a look at the plans and the way your architect, let's say for example, not to pick on architects, but let's say an architect wants to build a structure on your home. We're going in and saying, I'm not sure that structure is going to work. I don't think it meets code. And we're asking your architect to make changes. Once we get to a point where the plans meet code, issue a permit, and then eventually inspectors come out and make sure that your contractor in whatever capacity they're doing work for you is meeting the intent of the code and complying with code. I will tell you, we've opened up walls and found extension cords. We found some things that are very serious life safety issues. So that is my plug. I know building codes and building permits are a pain in the neck. I get it. But we are your neutral third party to ensure that your contractor is working in a very safe way and protecting you. Now I'll move on. The section on public ways and property regulates, includes regulations applicable to street sidewalks, alleys, trees, your water and sewer utilities, and telecommunications equipment. So basically, if a telecom company wants to come in and put an infrastructure, they have to go back to the section of the code and comply with those regulations. It also talks about things like whether or not you can obstruct public right-of-ways, right? Because we want to keep our sidewalks open, we want to keep our streets open. This is where you would find your water and sewer rates, for instance, and regulations applicable to our water and sewer services. The health and sanitation section includes regulations regarding food establishments, so restaurants, dining halls and universities, grocery stores, vending machines even. It also includes regulations relative to garbage and refuse, making sure people dispose of those things properly, noise pollution, and it also grants authority for health inspections, particularly of those food establishments. Fire regulations include the composition and authority of the fire department and its staff. It creates the fire pension fund, which we'll talk about in just a second too. And it also grants the authority to the fire department to take certain actions at the scene of emergencies. The police regulation section includes the composition and authority of the police department and its staff. It also creates the police pension fund, which is separate from the fire pension fund. It grants the police authority for certain actions. It includes animal control provisions, regulations on the sale and consumption of liquor, adjudication of local violations. So if you've ever gotten a parking ticket in River Forest, you come to court at the village hall instead of having to go to Maybrook Courthouse. It also includes special event regulations and bee control. So if you want to, and don't ask me why it's in here, this is what the attorney says, and so that's what we do. But if you want to keep bees in River Forest, then we have a permit and a license that you need to get, and this spells out how you would need to go about doing that to be a beekeeper in River Forest. Yeah. I will tell you, the police department doesn't regulate beekeeping. It just happens to be in that section of the code. We have somebody in the building department who handles all that. So don't call a police officer for your bee questions. All right, traffic regulations, that's basically the local traffic laws, right? And it establishes where we put stop signs, where we have one-way streets, parking restrictions, et cetera. zoning, this is a pretty significant portion of the code and an area where I've spent a lot of time reading and practicing it. It establishes your zoning districts. So as we sit here right now, we are sitting in the PRI district, Public Recreational Institutional. If you go over to North Avenue, you'd be in one of the commercial districts. It also establishes land uses within those districts, what's permitted, what's prohibited, and what requires special zoning approval. It also includes bulk regulations. So where your house can be on your property, how far is it set back from an individual property line? How tall can a building be? How many square feet can it have of floor area? Things like that. It also establishes the entitlement processes, which is a fancy word of saying you have to come and ask for permission to do certain things. So if you want to build 125 unit senior living community at the corner of Harlem and Chicago, you have to come to the village board and go through the plan unit development or plan development process. When you hear PUD and PD in River Forest are the same thing, but it's basically just a way of getting relief. So variations, special use, plan development, it's all a way of getting relief from the underlying zoning regulations. We also have condo regulations. So if you want to convert an apartment building to condos, or if you want to deconvert, there's regulations that apply to it and also grants the village limited inspection authority. And then finally, we have a section on historic preservation, which are the procedures you have to follow if you happen to own a historically or architecturally significant home. If you don't know whether or not you own an architecturally or a historically significant home in River Forest, go to our website, go to the guides section at the top, and it can take you to a whole section on historic preservation in River Forest, and it will show you a list of property addresses that are considered significant in town. We have a historic preservation district. It's not the same thing though. Not every house within that district is designated as significant. So just because we have a district doesn't necessarily mean you're subject to these regulations. So you kind of have to look at the fine print on this one. And if you're not sure, just give me a call, shoot me an email, I'll help you figure it out. So going back to boards, commissions, and committees, let me get my paper caught up with my presentation for a second. So the village board is the elected body, but they can create and are in some cases are required to create by statute a number of advisory bodies to hold hearings, take testimony, hold meetings, and consider matters, and then render a recommendation to the village board of trustees that the village board is then required to act upon. So for those of you who are on the phone, if you can't see the table, we have some boards and commissions, and I'll just use that term kind of interchangeably here, that are created by state statute. Those include the Board of Fire and Police Commissioners, the Fire Pension Board, the Police Pension Board, the Plan Commission, and the Zoning Board of Appeals. The other bodies, the Development Review Board, Economic Development Commission, Historic Preservation Commission, Local Ethics Commission, Sustainability Commission, and Traffic and Safety Commission, they are not created by state statute. So those are boards that the Village Board of Trustees has opted to create. We also have two current ad hoc committees, this group and age friendly. And if you don't know, ad hoc means for the specific purpose of looking at these issues, right? So DEI ad hoc advisory group is specifically for the purpose of looking at DEI. We've outlined here the number of voting members within each group. I would note with the Development Review Board, so some communities will have a Plan Commission and Zoning Board of Appeals smashed into one. In River Forest, we have them separated out. Plan Commission strictly looks at the comp plan, Zoning Board strictly looks at zoning regulations. We've created a body called the Development Review Board that blends Plan Commission and Zoning Board of Appeals, and their specific charge is looking at those PUDs or plan developments and rendering a recommendation to the Village Board of Trustees on those issues. Each has different term lengths. If they're a body that's created by statute, those term lengths are established by statute. If they are not created by statute, then they're identified at the local level. And then the meeting schedule is listed here. But all of these bodies, if you look on our website under advisory bodies or advisory boards and commissions, all of this information is here as well. All of their agendas are posted online in accordance with the Open Meetings Act requirements. We audio record all of those meetings unless they're in closed session. So you have a number of residents in this community helping the board make important decisions. So switching gears a little bit to village operations, I just wanted to spend a minute talking about the budget. So in River Forest, the operating budget for the municipal corporation is $33.8 million. Of that, $16.5 million, it goes to the general fund, $544,000 goes to motor fuel tax fund, $265,000 to debt service, $3.5 million goes to the capital projects fund, $7.8 million into the water sewer fund, and $5 million into the pension trust funds. One of the single most important things that any municipality does every year is adopt its local budget. It is a policy statement and it is a plan for what we are going to do with the tax dollars and the fees that we receive every year. The main operating fund, so if you think of the village budget in terms of like household fund, your day-to-day expenses, they all come out of the general fund. When you set money aside to do a special project, like if you want to put an addition onto your home or do something like that, think of that as your capital projects fund. Debt service is literally the debt that you owe. Motor fuel tax fund is a per capita revenue. So when we talk about those population and those census numbers, when you go to the fuel pump and you purchase gas, you pay a certain tax on that gas. That's remitted back to the municipality. First it goes to the state, then it comes to us on a per capita basis. So let's say we have 10,000 residents and we get $40 a head. We get that much money in revenue every year. You can do the math faster than I can. And that money then is restricted by the state on how we use it. So motor fuel tax revenue has to be used to improve public rights of way. So your streets, things like that. We can't use that for my salary, for instance. That all goes towards capital projects in River Forest. Debt service fund, this is where you literally pay the principal and interest on debt that you've taken out, just like you would pay a mortgage, right? Your principal and interest. The capital improvement project funds, here's where we get into government acronym fund. So the SERF is the capital equipment replacement fund. Every time we purchase a piece of equipment or a vehicle, we depreciate that and plan for its replacement. So every year we're setting money aside to replace that vehicle so that when it comes due, we have the money cash on hand, we just pay for it, we don't issue debt. CIF is the capital improvement fund. That's where all that red light camera revenue goes. We don't use it for operations. We strictly use it to make improvements in the community. The economic development fund is proceeds from, I'm drawing a complete blank on it for right now. That's where we account for revenues and expenditures in TIFs. We also have the Infrastructure Improvement Bond Fund. And again, that's principal and interest on different types of improvement projects. We do have two TIF districts here in River Forest, North Avenue and Madison Street for the full length of the community. So on Madison, it's Thatcher to Lathrop. North Avenue is Thatcher to Harlem. Water and Sewer Fund operates like an enterprise fund. So just, it operates like a private business would. Any money that comes into the Water and Sewer Fund for the purchase of those utilities or those commodities goes right back into it. And the money we collect goes right back into the system. And we also have the pension trust funds. So in village government, we're all putting money away towards a pension. As a non-sworn employee, meaning non-police, non-fire, so me and my other counterparts, we're all part of IMRF, Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund, which is a sustainable pension fund. We contribute to it, our employers contribute to it. There's all kinds of reports, if you ever want to do a deep dive into pension funding in the state of Illinois, about how the IMRF pension fund is the model for how it should be done. Then we also have pension trust funds. So police is in one, fire is in one. And there are contributions made to that every year based on actuarial assumptions of who's going to retire, how long they're going to live once they retire, and how much money that we have to set aside to fund those pensions. Is when police officers and firefighters retire, they're eligible to earn a certain percentage of their salary as their pension. When you hear the governor, the Illinois Municipal League, talking about public safety pension reform, this is what they're talking about. And one of the major changes that they've made as of late, and that municipalities, I think, supported pretty heavily, was the consolidation of investments. So you had all these different funds across all these different municipalities in Illinois who were taking their pot of money and investing it, getting whatever returns or losses in some case, and either enjoying them or eating them. All of those investments have now been consolidated into one area. And so there's a kind of a smoothing and a risk sharing effect that occurs when that happens. And what we expect that to do is to alleviate some of the pressure that municipalities are under to continue to have to contribute more and more and more to these pension funds. I don't mean to pick on anybody. I'm not trying to say anything in a disparaging way. So please don't take these as negative comments. These are employees who've worked very hard and they've earned those pension benefits. They're entitled to them. However, our job as a municipality is to balance what they're entitled to under the law with what we need to do as a municipality to provide services. And so when there are common sense reforms like that, we're behind them. I know that the state has continued to look at that issue. The Illinois Municipal League is a, how do I want to describe it? It's an organization that basically represents municipalities across the state of Illinois. And so if you ever want to read about what they've been doing in the task force that was created to study this issue and see if there are other ways to consolidate those pension funds, the Illinois Municipal League is a great source of information for that purpose. All right, moving on. So within our budget, just to kind of give you an idea of expenditures by category, I apologize that the colors aren't a little bit better here, but the point of this is to say that as a service industry or as a service organization, a lot of what we pay for every year goes towards salaries and benefits. So about 56.5% of our budget for this past fiscal year goes towards salary and benefits. Capital outlay accounts for 16.8% of the budget. Those are capital projects that are longer term or products that generally have an estimated useful life of more than 2 years and cost $10,000. So vehicles, things like that. Contractual services accounts for 14.2% of the budget. Commodities is 7.4%. Interfund transfers is less than 1%. And depreciation is also 1%. So your River Forest staff consists of about 80 FTEs or 80 full-time equivalents. In terms of headcount, not talking full-time equivalents, right? Because we have part-time, semi-full-time, and full-time. In administration, we have 5 employees. In finance, we have 5 employees. In police, we have 31, and that accounts for civilian and sworn. In fire, there's 22, and again, that accounts for civilian and sworn. In public works, we have 15, and in the development services division of that department, we have 3. 65% of all village employees belong to a collective bargaining unit. Police, patrol officers, and sergeants are represented by the Fraternal Order of Police. Fire lieutenants are a member of the Illinois Association or International Association of Firefighters. Firefighters and paramedics are also members of IAFF, but they're in a separate bargaining unit. Public Works is represented by Local 150 operating engineers. So when we talk about salaries and benefits and expenditures, a lot of what we have to do is contractually driven. We negotiate those contracts on whatever term we need to. So for Public Works, it's 3 years. The most recent police contract will be 4 years. So we go in and we have to negotiate that every couple of years. In police and fire, they do not have the right to strike. So instead they have the right to something called interest arbitration, where we go and we take our case to a judge and the judge says, here's what you have to do. Here's the salary that you have to give. Here's the benefits that you have to award. Whatever is in dispute, the arbitrator has to make that decision, and it's a binding decision. With Local 150 or Public Works, they do have the right to strike. They don't have the right to interest arbitration unless it's the first contract. These are mature contracts. FOP, that contract's been around since before 1985. For firefighters, it's been around for a number of years. Local 150, it's been around for a number of years. So Public Works does not have the right to interest arbitration at this point. All right, so just kind of diving into departments a little bit, and I'm watching the time. In administration, which is the department I work in, we oversee the day-to-day municipal operations. The administrator reports directly to the Village Board of Trustees and is responsible for supervising all of the department heads. So even though department heads are appointed by the president and Board of Trustees, that supervision authority is delegated to the village administrator. We are responsible for executing the board's policy goals and the direction of the village board. We oversee the annual budget process that has been a lion's share of my job for the last 8 years. Anytime communications come out from the village, it's primarily through the administration department. We also operate all of our internal functions. So in the assistant role, I oversaw human resources, information technology, risk management, labor relations, and a variety of other things, including land use and land use planning and zoning. Economic development is operated out of this department with the support of, and including land use planning and zoning, we use contractual relationships to assist us with that when needed. We license local businesses, food establishments, and the like. And we obviously, like I said, implement policy direction. The finance department is in charge of all the accounting for the organization, financial reporting, budgeting as well. The finance director and I work hand in hand when it comes to the budget and the capital plan that we do every year. They also are your utility billing department. So we have one employee who oversees all of the water bills that get sent out. We process all the real estate transfer stamps. So when you go to sell your house, that's the department that you deal with. It's a large customer service department. When you come to the front counter at the village hall, the people that you're interacting with are members of the finance department. And then they also provide a lot of other support services to other departments, including payroll benefits, purchasing, accounts payable, et cetera. Police, everybody knows what the police department does. So I won't spend a ton of time on this, but I just wanna highlight some of the things that they do. One component of police that I think doesn't come to light a lot is the fleet management, just the fleet of vehicles that they have that need to be maintained and serviced regularly, replaced, the equipment that goes into a vehicle. If you ever wanna take a look at what those squad cars are like, they are rolling offices. There are laptop computers, there's all kinds of recording equipment inside the vehicle that looks outside the vehicle. And so they are really just kind of roving data Wi-Fi spots with all kinds of connectivity back to the CAD system, which is what the dispatchers use. That's how those calls come out right on a computer. And so those mobile, they're called MDTs or mobile data terminals, are really the hub of that as the officer operates that vehicle. The fire department, again, I'm sure everybody's pretty familiar with what a fire department does. It falls into a couple of different categories: fire prevention, some public education is a portion of that, building inspections, plan review, anytime you want to do something new, the fire marshal takes a look at it, and then fire suppression, and then obviously emergency medical services. They also do a lot of maintenance. Again, they have a large fleet as well. Fire trucks, fire ambulances, fire engines, all they're very expensive pieces of equipment. They don't get replaced very often, but they do need a lot of love and maintenance. They do a good job of doing that. And then they also, all those fire hydrants that are throughout the community, they test them on a rotating basis to make sure that they work when they're supposed to work. Public Works and Development Services. So this is all the infrastructure management, snow removal. They do a lot with emergency and disaster preparedness. So anytime we are concerned about potential flooding in the community, these are the members of the department who are out there setting up those flood barriers and trying to, you know, keep the water from coming into our community. They obviously operate a pretty substantial fleet and a lot of equipment. They also oversee engineering and GIS. So GIS stands for Geographic Information Services. We have a pretty robust computer program that keeps track of all village infrastructure and assets. It's all map-based. So every fire hydrant, every water main, every sidewalk, every tree, we catalog it. And on some of those items under, we'll get into finance stuff later, but we're required to depreciate some of those assets and plan to replace them. And so GIS helps us do a lot of that. Solid waste collection and disposal. They oversee the contract with your waste hauler. They do the street sweeping, particularly after storms. Forestry, we have arborists on staff who helped maintain our urban forest. We also recently rolled building under the Public Works Division as development services. So the building division, as I mentioned before, they administer all the building codes and property maintenance standards. They process all the permit applications. We have two fairly new employees in the department who are doing a good job trying to crank through permit applications that have been received. Building has not slowed down in River Forest despite the pandemic. The scope of the projects changed a little bit, because everybody's sick of looking at their backyards. And so everybody wants better fences, better patios, better grills, better everything. And I can completely understand I'm in the same boat. And so we've been really busy with a lot of those projects. Again, they're your neutral third party. We also license all contractors operating in River Forest. So if you're a plumber who wants to come in and work in town, you have to prove up to the village that you have a state license, that you have work comp insurance, and that you have a surety bond. So that basically, if you do work in River Forest that doesn't comply with code or you cause damage to public infrastructure, we can draw on that bond, take the money and make those repairs. So it's a pain in the neck. Your contractors typically hate it. And we do a lot of handholding in this area. It's a very high touch customer service area, but it is, we do it because it's a service to you as residents to ensure that the people who are coming and doing the work in your community are qualified to do so. If you choose not to get your contractor licensed or to use somebody, I mean, you shouldn't. It's really a violation of the code, but we're not going to come in and bust down your door and stop your contractor. But if they do something wrong, if you rip down that wall and you find the extension cord that your electrician said was not an extension cord, you have no recourse through the village. There's no police power we can use to take action other than to try and cite them and track them down. And that's if we can even find them. We also investigate and resolve property code maintenance complaints. So I mentioned earlier that we have a lot of contractual obligations in our budget. And as a relatively small staff, 80 FTEs is considered a relatively small staff in the municipal world. And there is no magic formula for how many employees you're supposed to have based on the number of residents that you have. It really varies. So in police and fire, it's based on calls for service. It's also based on some staffing operational needs, right? We have people who take vacation and you need to be able to cover. In public works, there kind of was this rule of thumb of one employee for every 1,000 residents. That's not necessarily true because that landscape kind of shifts from time to time based on what services it makes sense to outsource versus keep in-house. And so there is no magic formula. But at any rate, as a relatively small staff, there are situations where we're either required to outsource certain things or it just makes more financial sense to do that than to bring somebody in-house. And we're always very cognizant of that. So emergency dispatch is a really good example of an outsourced service that under the law, we're actually required to outsource that. There was a lot of different dispatch centers across the state of Illinois, and then the state passed legislation that says if you're a town under 25,000, you can't have your own dispatch center. You have to consolidate it and join another dispatch center. So we've seen different dispatch agencies pop up over the last few years. In River Forest, we use the West Suburban Consolidated Dispatch Center, or WSCDC. They have their facility right at the Village Hall, and they dispatch for River Forest, Oak Park, and Forest Park. We're always looking to get new members because as new members come in, the amount we pay gets spread out among other communities, and that's a direct savings to you as the taxpayers. For land use planning consulting services, we don't have, there's a professional credential called a certified planner or certified land use planner. We don't have one on staff because we're just, even with all the building activity, we're not that busy when it comes to land use stuff. So we outsource that to Houseel Levine and Associates. John Houseel is a River Forest resident. Legal services, we do not have in-house counsel. We use Kleinthorpe and Jenkins for our general counsel. So if you watch a board meeting and you see a gentleman in a suit with some glasses sitting next to me, that's Greg Smith, the village's attorney. For labor and employment law, we use Clark Baird Smith. For traffic engineering services, we don't have a traffic engineer on staff. We have a civil engineer on staff. So for traffic engineering services, we use a firm called KLOA. When you see crossing guards out in River Forest, that's a contractual agreement with the school district. We use Andy Frayne. For infrastructure projects, it's always the lowest responsible bidder. Crisis intervention services are through Thrive. Senior services are through the township. I don't have them listed here, but scavenger services, obviously, you know, you all have Roy Strom. Information technology, I don't have an IT person on staff full time. So we outsource that to a consultant and they have staff in the Village Hall a couple days a week and remote as needed. Our GIS, all of that asset tracking and the data location and all of that is done through municipal GIS partners. We call it the GIS Consortium, and the Village of River Forest and a number of other municipalities all contribute to this consortium. We have a technician who does all of the mapping and the data entry for us, and then we work together to create a really robust, basically database of information. It's tied to every building permit that we have. So let's say, for instance, fire is out on site at an emergency response. They're not sure, like, let's say they're here. And let's say, for instance, there was recently some work done at Palmer Hall and The person in the field isn't completely positive what happened. They can pull up the building permit record, see all of the drawings, and have that information in the field right then and there to make decisions about here's how we go into the building, here's what we need to avoid. Whoops, they have a giant film storage lab in the basement. We're going to want to avoid that because when that burns, it's real hot and becomes real dangerous. So they can make those real-time decisions based on this really robust data network that's all rooted in an address-based location system. We outsource a significant portion of building plan reviews to BNF Technical, and we also outsource our inspections. So when an inspector comes in to take a look at your home addition, they're from BNF. We also use a company called Safe Built, but that's only for structural and architectural, certain types of very specific review. Tree care and tree trimming goes to the lowest responsible bidder when it's beyond what our public works department can handle. And then obviously when we're audited, it's not by us, right? We don't audit ourselves. Instead, we bring in BKD to do that for us. And that relates, so we switch auditors periodically too, which is best practice. So this isn't an exhaustive list, just an example of some of the things that we outsource. And I went back, you can, the other thing to note too, anything that's over $20,000 has to go to the village board for approval. So the other thing we do is every board meeting, they approve what you might call the list of bills. So any payment that goes out from the village of River Forest to any entity at all has to be approved by the village board, and it's always part of the village board packet. So every purchase that is made by the village of River Forest, even if it's a $10 wrench at Ace Hardware, goes on that list of bills.
And one of the qualifiers for that is if we get funding like grants from so the census is a perfect one. We received grants for publication, marketing to the village. So there wasn't a need for going to.
All right. So with that, I have to do a plug for our website on web on the website. And let me see if I can stop sharing here for just a second and get over to our website. There we go.
Thank you for this overall picture of the village and what government looks like. I think I've said this a couple of times, but as we continue, each of these slides will probably be expanded to a full presentation so we can begin to do deep dives into each of these parts of the village.
Exactly. So real quickly, if you ever want to see where all the agendas and minutes are, we have a tab at the top. I'll make sure everybody can see it. So this is where you can find everything. You can search, you can go to older meetings, you can filter by year, and you can filter by which body you wanna look at. So if you can't find the email that I sent you with the packet for the DEI meeting, just go to this website. Agendas and minutes, we looked at that. Transparency, this is our transparency portal. So all of our financial information and documents, any contracts, financial information, information on building permits, all of our labor agreements are here on the website. And if it looks like some of them are out of date, it's because they are, and we continue to negotiate them. Any water quality reports that we post, any lobbying activities that we participate in goes here. How to file a Freedom of Information request is on this website as well. And we'll highlight just a few more things and then I'll close out of this. If you want to sign up for e-news and alerts, there's a really simple portal that you can use to subscribe here, and you'll start getting emails from us. So you would get board agendas, weekly newsletters, and monthly e-newsletters. And if you ever want to look at an archive of our newsletters, there you go. Just a few other things. On the village code, at the bottom of the screen, we have a section on the village code. It takes you to this separate website, which, let's see if it'll pull up for me or if it's just going to stall out. Yeah. We won't sit around looking at that. At any rate, you can go to the village code. There's an expansion menu on the left-hand side that you can use to-
It's a little old-timey, but-
It does, yeah, exactly, but it's really helpful. And then just real quickly, all of our applications are available online. You can do all that. Life in River Forest is a really good place to find a lot of information. So if you wanna learn more about beekeeping, there you go. If you wanna learn a little bit more about The comprehensive plan, which is a very important document. That's where you would find it. Historic preservation, I mentioned before. Starting a business, the development approval process, sustainability programs, you name it, you can find a ton of information there. News, anything we put out goes there. Boards and commissions, again, all of the advisory bodies are here. So let's pull up, for instance, DEI. That's where you'll find all the upcoming meetings. And then you can click on these, for instance, and it'll take you to that. And that's where you find the agenda and whatnot. So with that, are there any questions? Thank you, everybody, for staying awake.
Well, I have a few. I have a few.
Okay. Go ahead.
So the first one I have is about the contractors and how does the village solicit contractors? I think we should have more diversity in that.
So are you talking about who we hire to perform those contractual services?
Yes.
Okay. So just real quickly, we can talk about purchasing more in depth because that's a whole separate topic in and of itself. But we are bound by certain requirements under state law regarding when we have to issue requests for proposals, requests for qualifications, when we go out to bid, how many quotes we have to receive for certain types of purchases. And so that is all a function of either state law or our purchasing policy. I appreciate your comment about supplier diversity, and I think that is a good topic. But one that would take a little bit more time to suss out. So
no, I'm just asking. You don't have to answer.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
Yeah, no, don't be so defensive.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't mean to be defensive. I'm just trying to put some context around it.
And the second one is when we talk about all the municipalities, like exactly who has the money to do things in town, like I'm still, even everything you shared, which was absolutely beautiful, and but I'm only listening. I can't see it. I'm still driving home from my taking my kid to college, so I'm still trying to figure out, like, who has the money to do a lot of social justice. And I look at it and I'm like going, all right, with River Forest, I mean, like, you do police, fire, and sewers. No offense to your entire presentation, but I don't get it.
So I think that would be the 11 taxi bodies that you were talking about mm-hmm. before, Lisa. And so each one of them is responsible for different things in the community. Certainly, I would say that it's probably the responsibility of all taxi bodies to be looking at issues around social justice. Obviously, we've taken particular interest with this committee on the village board. So
money comes in through taxes. I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry. Money comes in through taxes and then gets divvied up to each of those taxing bodies. And the location that Lisa cited earlier about the percentages of how that gets divvied up on the River Forest website, I think is a really good place to look at that information. And I think some of that's in the presentation, so you'll be able to see that when you see get your email.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Okay, given that it's 9:01, I think, and we try to end our meetings at 9:00, Erica, do we want to bring up DEI goals and responsibilities the next meeting?
I think that's a good idea.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the next meeting date would be scheduled on September 6th, which is Labor Day. And I believe it may also be Rosh Hashanah, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. So we would not hold a meeting that night, which means the next regularly scheduled meeting would be September 21st, so a little bit more than a month from now. If the group collectively feels there is a need to reschedule the September 6th meeting, we can look at that as a possibility. If not, then what we would do is just meet on the 21st. Glenn.
I move that we meet on September 7th, which would be Tuesday, as a rescheduled meeting from September 6th.
Is there a second?
I second that.
So then we would not do the 21st?
No, that would be in addition to the 21st. Yes.
That's also the actual day of Rosh Hashanah.
Okay.
Jewish holiday.
So with that being a holiday, then we would need to look at a different date. I would ask that we would look at a different date. Stacey?
Would it be possible, instead of doing the first and third in that month, would be the second and fourth?
I'm sorry, I did not mean to second that.
Oh, Mindy, you want to withdraw your second of the motion?
Yeah, I'll withdraw my motion.
Okay.
The conflict. But I do think we ought to try to meet if we can. Delaying over a month just seems like we're going to lose a lot of momentum.
Just as an FYI on the question about could we do the second and the fourth, those are village board meeting nights, so unfortunately we can't. Okay, any other discussion? Otherwise we'll stick with this schedule. I appreciate the comment, and if not, we'll just meet on the 21st then.
And there might be ways that we can engage us as a committee without coming together, so we'll look to do that. Thanks.
Yes.
Could you send out whatever the subcommittee, can they finalize that before, like a day or two before our meeting, so we have a chance to look at it? Because if we have conflicts, can't spend time with it. So myself, that would be very.
I anticipate it'll probably come more than a day or two.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. If there's nothing else, then I would ask for a motion to adjourn.
Sheila.
I make a motion to adjourn the meeting at 9:04.
Is we should have
Is there a second for the motion to adjourn?
Second.
Liz.
For a second for that.
All right, all in favor?
Sorry.
Any opposed? All right. Motion adjourned. Thank you, everyone, for your time tonight.